Welcome back to another episode of an Investor's Journey podcast. I am your host, Jonathan Barbera. And in this episode, I wanted to cover a few of your questions that you have sent in that have been a little more repetitive from other people. So I want to address them on this episode. I did not ask for anybody's permission on whether or not I can post these. So I will not be sharing their names, but I will be covering their questions. So let's get started with the first one. So we have actually four questions that I'm going to address. One of them is I've been doing door knocking. I've been doing driving for dollars and cold calling for a while, but I'm still not getting anywhere. What else can I do? Another one is, do I need an LLC to get started? What formula do you use? I'm guessing what formula do you use? They're probably asking about running numbers when we pick up flips and stuff like that. So I'll address that one. And the last one I'll talk about is, how do you estimate your repairs? All right. So on the first one, I've been doing driving for dollars and cold calling, but I'm still not getting anywhere. What else can I do? The short answer is you're not doing enough, right? So a lot of people, especially the ones that I've been talking to that do cold calling and driving for dollars and maybe door knocking, they've been doing it for maybe a few months. I mean, if that. There's nobody I know that's been doing it for over a year consistently and complains that they're not getting results, because it works. I mean, there's no question about it of whether it works or not. It works. It's just you're not being consistent enough and you haven't been doing it long enough. Marketing, really in any area of business, in any business, it's a lot harder at the beginning, right? So marketing at the beginning takes a lot of time and a lot of money. You got to get that big marketing wheel turning. And it takes a lot of effort from you, and it takes a lot of time and a lot of consistency. And that is something that nobody wants to do. And I get it. I was there too. It's not easy. You know, it's something that you got to keep going. You got to keep doing. You got to keep, you know, you can't take breaks. You can't stop. You can't get discouraged. It's something that you just got to keep going. And I know it's very hard to do. But driving for dollars and cold calling, for me, in my experience and with the people I work with, it is by far the best way to get it. Now, when you're asking what else, what I'm worried about with this question is that you are going to stop what you already started doing. So pretty much that little bit of momentum that you've picked up driving for dollars and cold calling, you're probably going to stop doing that to do this next thing, whatever it may be. You know, and I've talked about marketing a lot because marketing is a huge issue. I think if you can dedicate the time to generating leads and to becoming a good marketer, where you can understand your market, you can understand what systems to put in place and all that, you will become a very, very successful investor. You will become a very successful person as far as people want to partner with you more. I mean, I will partner with anybody that's killing it in marketing. And, you know, we will work out some really good deals because the ability that we have in our business is that we can get the deals done. You understand? So if you can find them, we can get them done. Right? So, and for very profitable margins. And that is something, but while this is really great, right, what we can do, but it's also really, really, really valuable if you can generate leads. If you're somebody that can become a really good marketer, I mean, that is a huge valuable step, right? And that's where a lot of people kind of, I think, have an issue between being a wholesaler and an investor and everything. They don't realize being a wholesaler is not wholesaling properties, but it's becoming a really good marketer. It's becoming a really good lead generator. That is what wholesaling is. As a wholesaler, you need to generate leads nonstop. That's the only way a wholesaler can ever make enough money. You always need more deals coming in, more leads coming in. That's the only way you're going to make money. So your focus is not so much on how am I going to wholesale these? It's more on how can I get more houses, more deals, more contracts, more of these. Because as a wholesaler, you're not hitting home runs, right? I mean, a lot of the deals that you're going to do are not huge profit margins because things happen throughout the deal process. You know, if it's not something you analyze correctly or then there were liens on the property, whatever the case may be. But you're not making 10, 15, 20 grand on every single deal you wholesale. There's a lot of deals that you're going to make 2, 3, 4 grand. Some of them, I mean, we did a deal, which I keep forgetting to cover on this. One day we're going to sit down with John, maybe over some whiskey, and talk about this, a few of our failures. But one of our deals that we did, we wholesaled for $180, I think was the max profit on that one. So that shit happens, right? But what your job is as lead generator. So going back to this question is, I've been doing this. I mean, my question back to them was, how long have you been doing this? How consistently? What is your driving for dollars list look like? If your driving for dollars list is anywhere under 1,000 addresses, you haven't done enough yet. You understand? Like, because we go back to the same thing. This is a numbers game. This is how many more deals can you get done? How many more people can you get in front of is the question, right? So if you're having, which is what I've come across with a lot of people, is, man, you know, I have a list of like 300 people and I'm calling them. And I was like, 300 people, that ain't shit. That's nothing. The reason that's nothing is because not all 300 people are going to answer the phone. Not all 300 phone numbers that you get are going to actually get to the person you need to speak to. So out of those 300, you're not speaking to all of them. You're maybe speaking to 20 or 30 of them, if that. And out of those 20 and 30, you got to make sure you catch them in that good moment when you call them. That, you know, they might be interested at that moment to go ahead and sell their house or be even interested in even entertaining a conversation with you. Or even just catching them in a good moment where they didn't just have something, you know, bad happen in their day or whatever, that they're not cursing you off. And now you got to postpone that call for a couple more weeks or something and then try again. So 300 is not enough. 500 is not enough. Even 1,000 leads is like, when you hit 1,000, you're starting to kind of hit, you know, where, okay, now you should be getting something, right? But even still, I'm talking about you need to be shooting for 2,000-3,000 addresses. That means more driving for dollars. You understand? You need to drive. You need to have like almost damn near every great pocket in your city. You need to have those areas. You understand? And when you have really, really, really hot pockets, you go to the exterior of those pockets because it always bleeds over. That's what we see a lot in San Antonio. That's where we kind of find our benefit when we jump into that next little hot pocket in our city that is, there's not much competition in. Because a lot of people tend to focus their attention on where it's hot, right? Because houses are selling ridiculously fast, so that's where they want to focus. What we look at is if we go just on the outskirts, we're not going to sell for as high, but we will sell as fast, and we won't have as much competition going after those properties. So that's where we target. So my answer, I mean, it's been a little long, but don't go chasing the next shiny penny, because that's not the answer. I don't care if there's a Facebook marketing program out there for real estate investors that's going to kill it, or some, you know, Google SEO shit that somebody's doing, a website, whatever. All of those things, everything is great, right? But you got to be consistent with it. So if you decide to do Facebook marketing, that's what you got to be consistent with. You got to be consistent with Facebook marketing. And then, I mean, not for nothing, but Facebook marketing or online, anything online is a lot more work. Because now you got to create the landing pages, the capture pages, the retargeting. You got to make sure that when you do an effective ad, the copy needs to be good. If you do a video, the video needs to be good. The call to action needs to be on point. You know, it needs to be direct. There's a lot of things going on with this. So if you don't understand this yourself, just hiring a company that supposedly is going to do this for you, it's a bad way to go. Because no company knows your business like you're going to know your business. and no company is going to sell it like you're going to sell it, right? So chasing another thing, or when you go, and I've said this before, when you go to a networking event and somebody's saying, oh, I'm killing it, you know, with probates or with this or with that or whatever, it's fine to try them, but don't stop what you're already doing. You understand? The only recommendation I have for this person, if you're doing driving for dollars and cold calling, which I think they're the best strategies to use, you're just not doing enough. Honestly, it's just, you're just not doing enough. And that's really it. That's it. Do more. If you do more, if you work harder, if you call people more, you do more cold calling, more driving, you will get it. It's a sheer numbers thing. You understand? So I hope that helps. And I hope that, you know, that, well, that did help the person that I, that did ask this question. So I hope that helps you guys. The next question, do I need an LLC to start? So disclaimers, right? I'm not an accountant, an attorney. This is not financial advice, blah, blah, blah. This is just common sense shit. There's a lot of people that they get into real estate and I don't know if it's a procrastination tactic or if it's, you know, an optimistic point of view, but you haven't even started and you're already thinking about, you know, what entity structure should I have, my business cards, my website, my logo, my this, my that, and you haven't even gotten a deal done, right? So I don't think an LLC is necessary at all when you're starting off. What you need to focus on is this even for you? Put in the work, generate the leads, close some deals. Because even at the beginning, an LLC is not going to give you a huge advantage over anything, especially if you're wholesaling properties. Like, it's just not going to give you much protections, so that you're not doing that much. But if you find yourself doing, you know, multiple deals and you're like, oh, no, I really like this, I got the hang of this, you know, I'm really enjoying this, I know I'm going to keep doing it, then go ahead and invest and create a good LLC. Make sure you understand the asset protection side of it, the ownership splits on it, because a single person LLC, to my understanding, is it gives you still zero protection on yourself because it's still just one person. Like, you need to have somebody else on the LLC. But find all those things out. Find a good CPA that you can sit down with and actually put a strategy together. Tell them your strategy. What is it that you do? You know, what are your goals? Because every LLC is going to be structured differently and it should be ran differently, and it needs its own bank accounts, its own accounting, all these things, right? So it's very involved to have an LLC. But when you're ready, when you're just getting started, it's not necessary. You understand? When you have these, again, yeah, I'm going to bash some gurus, but you have these gurus that they sell their program and then they're like, oh, and it comes with a free LLC setup kit or whatever the hell they're selling you with. All I see those things are is just another barrier between you and getting started. Just get started. The LLC has no benefit at the beginning, especially when you haven't done anything. You understand? All you're doing is just wasting time and money. Don't do that yet. Set yourself up. Get some marketing going. Any money you have, throw it into marketing. Throw it into maybe just learning something, getting some education. Partnering with people, whatever it may be, but invest the money in yourself at the beginning. Try to get some deals going, try to get some deals done. Figure out if you really like this. Then, once you do all that you're like, no, I love this, I'm gonna do this as a business. Now go ahead and invest in an LLC, maybe a logo, some simple business cards, maybe a simple website, which should be just a landing page at the beginning, then you can do something like that. But this is after you've done a few deals, and you can even use the proceeds from those deals to fund all this, right? So don't just jump into an LLC because it's going to make you feel special or look legit. Like, it means absolutely nothing. All you're doing is wasting money. I know too many people that got started in real estate, formed their, you know, We Buy Houses LLC, and months later, they're back to their jobs and doing all this, and now they have this LLC that they spent money on that's just sitting there not doing anything, you know. And it's just, it's a waste of time, it's a waste of effort, and it's just another excuse to why not get started right now because you need an LLC. So don't waste your time with that. To get started, when you're getting started, just get started. Get doing it. Get doing some deals. Do some shit. You know, make some money. And once you get that going, then start looking at the next step of, you know, entity structure and business structure and all that. Next question. What formula do you use? So usually the way I've been getting this question a lot is when we're calculating how to buy a house, right? So this is a lot from wholesalers mostly. And the rule of thumb that it's easy to kind of like sell as far as guru shit goes is the 70% minus repairs. So what that means is that you determine the ARV, the after repair value, or the updated value, whatever you want to use. So whatever the value of that particular house is going to be fully updated, right? What is the max that house can sell for? You get that value and you do minus 70%. So let me see if I can, I don't want to confuse you guys. So you'll do minus 30%, right? Which will leave you at 70% of the value. And then you'll do minus repairs from that point. So what the 30% pretty much breaks down to is going to be your closing cost and all of that plus your profit. So that pretty much breaks down to about 12.5% to 15% is going to be your profit. The remaining amount is going to be, you know, closing costs and all this other stuff. So that leaves you at where you need to be after you minus that 30%. That leaves you pretty much at where you need to be once you're done with the house. So that's why you minus your repairs right after that, right? So once you're at, let's do a round number. So your house fully renovated, fixed up, sells for 100 grand. You do minus the 30%, leaves you a 70 grand. Then you say maybe you need, you know, 10 grand of repairs. So you subtract that, leaves you a 60 grand. So if you buy the house for 60, you do $10,000 in repairs, it puts you at 70 and you sell it for 100, then it's going to give you that 30%. You're going to have 12.5%, 15% about is going to be your profit, and the other 15 to 70% is going to be your expenses, right? So that's pretty much how that breaks down. And then for rentals, there's that it's the same formula, but it's 80% minus repairs. So you'll do from the 100,000, you'll do minus 20% minus the repairs. That's pretty much what you should be buying it in. That is the rule of thumb. We use that sometimes to do a very, very fast evaluation on a property. And I'm talking about like just an extremely lazy, fast evaluation. The reason I'm stressing that is because we have bought a lot of houses that do not meet that rule of thumb. And that is because we actually run our numbers when we buy a house, right? So there are houses that we have bought that have not been 70% minus repairs to do a flip, right? We've done it at 75%, close to 78%, I think is probably the highest we've gone on one. Not sure, but I think 78%. What that means is that potentially our profit is a lot less, but it wasn't in these situations because when we run our numbers, so we run our numbers because my business partner, John, is a real estate agent. So when he lists our properties, we don't have a 3% agent fee. So that's an extra 3% to our bottom line, right? So, and then we factor in holding costs. So we narrowed that down where we don't need to do a ball, you know, a big 17%, 15% holding costs and closing costs and all that, because we actually narrow that down to like, all right, what is our actual holding cost going to be? In this neighborhood, we know we should be out of this house in 4 months, let's say, right? Because you have the 90-day FHA holding, and then by the time it sells and all this, maybe a little more. You know, maybe 5 months. So whatever the time is, we start factoring those actual numbers in. And then we factor in, how are we buying this house? So we recently did one that we did subject to. So all we needed to bring in was $25,000 for the rehab. And this wasn't a 70% deal. This was closer to an 80% deal. But when you're putting in we're only investing 25 grand and we're making, I think it was like 17 grand. That's a good return of our money, right? You put 25, you make 17. That was a good return on our money. So that made sense. So that's where I'm trying to get at is that those are the rule of thumbs. It's good to use those to kind of just get an idea. And if you're a wholesaler, kind of going back a little bit, but if you're a wholesaler and you do the 70% minus repairs, and we use the same $100,000 example, and you're down to and minus repairs are 10 grand, so you're down to 60. Remember, you got to add your wholesale fee. So that 60 needs to be more maybe 55, 50, whatever you feel the wholesale fee should be. Because that's where you need to get it on the contract. Because then you need to sell it to your end buyer that is actually going to flip it for 60. So then they can put in their 10 and make their money. All right. And I mean, obviously, there's a lot more shit. Maybe there's a whole episode we can probably do on this. Because there's something else that you wholesalers need to keep in mind is that there's closing costs involved when the buyer is buying it from you, then they're fixing it and then they're reselling it, right? So there's closing costs at the beginning as well. And a lot of wholesalers have the tendency to get a property on the contract where they say, always buyer pays all closing costs, done, right? They don't even try to negotiate. It's just like a default state for them. And it's fine. But you got to keep in mind that buyer paying all closing costs could mean an extra couple grand that the buyer needs to come out of pocket, right? And if it's a marginal deal, you might be screwing up that deal for them. So try to factor those in. Try to understand that, hey, if buyer's paying all closing costs, what should the actual price be on this house? And now thinking about it a little further, we are going to do a full episode. We're going to do one that we're just buying a house right now that this is happening in. We're buying it from a wholesaler. So we're going to run down all those numbers and how it should have been done. So then that way you get a better idea. But formulas we use is, again, we don't use any. We run our own numbers. The same with rentals. We run our own numbers. We want to know, like, what are we going to be all in it for? What do we need to have in the property if we need to leave any money in for the cash flow to make sense? A lot of times it matters, like, where the house is located because are we betting more for appreciation? Right, there's some areas that we bought houses in that we are more interested in the appreciation than the cash flow. So all those things play a factor in this on how much are we going to pay for this house. But rule of thumb, really quick and dirty, is going to be your 70% minus repairs for flips, 80% minus repairs for rentals. And if you're wholesaling it, after the repairs, minus whatever your wholesale fee is going to be. So I hope that helps. And the last question, how do we estimate our repairs? So this is another hard question to answer because the real answer is experience. You cannot, there's a lot of gurus out there that it's insane that they're getting away with this, but they're like, you know, just do $10 times the square footage of the house, you'll have your repair budget. And if the house is really messed up, do $20 times the square footage of the house and you'll have your repair budget. And I was like, that is complete bullshit. Like, I've had 1,000 square foot homes that I've spent 35, 40 grand in. You understand? Like, none of his formulas would have worked. And that's because it matters where the house is located, right? This house was a little over 1,000 square feet, but it was located in a really nice area. That 1,000 square foot doesn't matter. It still needs to be updated with high quality stuff, right? And yes, it's 1,000 square feet. Where that matters most is how many bedrooms it's going to have or how big the bedrooms are going to be. But every house still has kitchens and bathrooms, right? So like this house still had two full-size bathrooms and it still had a decent-sized kitchen. So the bulk of our cost is still there. It doesn't matter that it's 1,000 square feet. You're saving it, yeah, on paint, on maybe flooring and other little stuff, but not the major stuff. And then when we had plumbing issues. Doesn't matter, you know, really how drastically big the house is. You're still going to have plumbing issues. So we had sewer problems. We had to put a new roof on. We had to put a new AC. We actually had to build the whole AC into it. All those things cost a lot of extra money, right? So I would strongly recommend staying away from those. And the way that I've done it and the way that I've helped other new wholesalers do it is when you get a property that is not, that you don't know anything, right? So let's start there. You don't know a damn thing about evaluating repairs, period. And you have a property, you've spoken to the homeowner, you built some rapport, you know they want to sell. And now it's time to kind of submit an offer. Take some time and take somebody there with you. Preferably not a contractor. The reason, and I know this is kind of counterintuitive to a lot of things that you think you know, is a lot of people think that you should be taking contractors to give you estimates. The problem is that a lot of contractors don't know how to bid a project correctly. And then you can bid a project, let's say in January, and then by the time it closes and everything is close to the summertime, that time frame, materials could have gone up. Your contractor maybe is booked all the way through. So now if you want their time, it's going to cost more. Or now you got to go get another contractor. So, I mean, all these things you got to keep in mind. And that is not something that you're going to be able to know when you're starting off. So what I recommend is you take an investor with you. An investor that actually knows what they're doing. So if you have a seller that's like, yes, I'm ready to sell. I want to sell. You're building good rapport with them. Contact an investor. You know, this is why it's important to do some good networking and have some good contacts available so they can go out with you. Contact an investor. Tell them, hey, I have a property. I need to lock it up. I just don't know how to judge the repairs. Do you mind coming and give me a hand? So let them go out. And they'll point out all the things, right? They're going to tell you this house, no less than 40 grand. Or that's how we do it. I mean, we can go to a house and we are pretty much going to, we're always going to be on the conservative side. So if I tell you 40 grand and you do everything correctly and everything works out right, maybe you're in it for more like 35, 37, right? You have a little bit extra and a little wiggle room in there for the unknowns that come with a project that size. But you want to definitely make sure you take somebody that knows how to do it. There is no formula. I don't want to even begin to. I've heard a lot of people, they're like, well, the rules of five. So the rules of five is five for kitchen, five for bathroom, five for AC, five for roof, five for foundation, right? That should get you pretty close. It doesn't. I mean, can it get you close? Yeah, and so can the $20 a square foot get you close. It just depends, right? It depends on the house. It depends on everything. Like, there's some bathrooms I haven't spent $5,000 in, and there's some kitchens I've spent way more than $5,000 in. I mean, everything fluctuates, right? Where you're buying your materials, who the labor is, all of that matters. So you, those rules of thumb for repairs, I think, are very, very dangerous. I think you can actually get into more trouble doing it that way than by actually taking a real investor that actually renovates and flips houses into this property and having their opinion. I think their opinion is going to be a lot closer than anybody else's, because they're gonna know exactly what needs to get done to the property. That's another thing a contractor can't tell you. A contractor is gonna tell you how much it would cost for them to do what they need to do, but they can't tell you what needs to go in the house. They're not real estate investors, right? They don't know what houses in that area have. Should you have tile throughout the house, or laminate, or carpeting, or, you know, a plastic insert in the showers, or should you go with a tile shower? They don't know this stuff. This is, you know this, right? Or you should know this. So an investor will know that. A savvy, seasoned investor will know that. They'll go in and they'll say, no, this is the level of renovation you need to do to this house. And you need to, you know, do this, this, and this, and it's going to pretty much run you around $45,000. And what I try to tell them is like, look, it would cost me $45,000 with the people I use. If you don't have the connections I have, it might cost you closer to 50, maybe 55, right? Because I have built up relationships with a lot of contractors. I know when they're bullshitting me. I know when they're overcharging, or I know how to source my materials, where to get discounts from. So you got to maybe add a little cushion when you even deal with these investors. And the best thing, maybe, if anything, partner with them, right? Partner with investors. That's always the best way to learn, because you're going to learn firsthand as they're doing it, how everything works. So how we estimate repairs, we know how to do it, period. And if you don't know how to do it, get somebody that knows how to do it, bring them to your properties. It's going to be easier, and you're going to learn, I'm telling you, you're going to learn tremendously how to do this yourself. And all you need to do this is a couple properties. You'll do this at the, well, I mean, depends on your learning abilities, right? There are some people that are a little thicker head. But if you're a quick learner, within 3-4 properties that you go with somebody, you'll pretty much start understanding what to look at and how to judge repairs and how to know, like, all right, it should be within this ballpark, right? So that should help you in estimating repairs. So with that, before we end this episode, that's pretty much it with the questions I was going to answer. If you have any questions, for sure, send them to me, email me, John@PrimeHomes, or hit me up on social media, anywhere you're listening to this podcast or watching it, comment, let me know, and I'll answer your questions. But before we end, I just wanted to tell you again about the Black Sheep Open that we're holding in September. So don't miss out, check it out. We already have a ton of golfers, some awesome sponsor, crazy games that we're going to be doing. All the proceeds go to Homes for Our Troops. They build adaptive homes from wounded vets. We even have a few investor agents that we know that they've had the homes built for them. So it's a great organization. All the proceeds goes to them. It's a fun day. It's a lot of prizes. All anybody that attends gets the free banquet dinner, door prizes, drinks, games. I mean, great networking event for anybody in the real estate space. So if you're in Texas, come check this out. It's September 14th. Go to blacksheepopen.com to get more information, and I will see you guys there. And this is it for this episode. So I hope you guys enjoy it. If you have any questions, again, reach out, and I will catch you guys on the next one.